Welcome to Cloud Foundry Weekly, your source for all things Cloud Foundry. On this episode, we will discuss empowering .NET applications with Cloud Foundry and Teams Application Service. Our special guests are Andrew Stackoff, Martez Killens, and Chris Hester. Please enjoy the show.
Another week of Cloud Foundry Weekly. How you doing, yeah. Nick?
Hey, I'm doing great. Glad to be on today's episode of Cloud Foundry Weekly. Sorry, I can't speak today. But yeah, we have some fantastic guests here to bring on. And what are we going to be talking about today, Nikki, first before we bring them on?
So we're going to be talking all about one of the second most popular, when you look at the current numbers of .NET. So the second most popular programming framework out there today, just behind Java. But we're going to be talking about .NET and why TAZ is the best place to power those workloads.
All right. Well, with that, let's see here. We're going to bring on our first guest here, and that is going to be Andrew Stackoff. And he is, I think, been in this .NET world for quite some time. And he's currently a specialist Tanzu solution engineer. And I know I've used a lot of his diagrams and documents for .NET and TAZ and Cloud Foundry. And he's a great addition to the show, and I'm really looking forward to his commentary. And he also, it looks like he enjoys a lot of activities like rock climbing, archery, motorcycle, light aircraft aviation, and hang gliding. So we might have to talk about that a little bit as well. Just, you know, light aircraft aviation. I would like to hear about that. But we'll go to the next guest here. Nikki?
Yeah, we'll bring in. So the next guest is going to be Martez Killens. So Martez, he brings a wealth of experience, and I can tell you from personal experience, anytime I have something to do with .NET, Martez is usually the first person I call. He's worked in defense, finance, real estate, education as a .NET developer. His recent work emphasizes distributed systems design with a focus on microservices. He's very passionate about promoting cloud native adoption and crafting a modern development experience. And in his free time, he likes to play sports. Chicago and Phoenix, couldn't get much difference in, you know, weather between Chicago and Phoenix.
Absolutely.
And then the last person we're going to bring in is Chris Hester. So Chris is a software architect dedicated to problem solving. He began as a software developer and has worked on .NET since its early releases. Over the past 2.5 years, he has excelled as a Tanzu solution architect working for VMware, and he leverages his skills to bring positive outcomes to all of his customers. So let's start with Andrew. You know, what do you want to tell us about yourself, Andrew? And just a reminder, you're on mute. There you go.
So I think I got into the .NET since it was version 1.0 beta. That's how far back I go. And I kind of fell in love with the language. No regrets ever since. I've been kind of describing myself as a .NET geek. You know, I learned a number of languages since, but this is still my passion. And I always find new creative ways on how to make it work in a very elaborate ways that people don't think about. In my free time, I like to describe myself as a adrenaline junkie wrapped in a geek's body.
So you started .NET all the way back in what, like 2002, back when it was first, or a little bit later?
Yeah. So somewhere back there, because I remember it was not even G8 yet when I started looking at it. I think back then what I was thinking is like, well, I can either try to compete with all the old timers that know Java or jump on this bandwagon right out of college in .NET, and everybody's at the same level.
Right. Martez?
Found out well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started using .NET in about 2007. Prior to that, in school, I had used C++. And then my first post-school work opportunity, we were actually a Java company. And so when I came into .NET, I didn't
know. Buffer.
Didn't know kind of what was going on. And it took me a little bit to warm up into it, but then I kind of got used to the tooling, the IDE, Visual Studio, still love it. And it just really captured my attention since then.
How about you, Chris? And just so everybody knows, Chris is going to be our dissenting voice here today. He's going to be representing the Kubernetes side. So stay tuned as I try to get to Andrew and Chris into a pit fight about which is better.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Funny, I remember starting in college with languages like Pascal and then C, and you heard about this Java movement, right? This memory management, no more Alex and Malix and Calix. And for whatever reason, .NET just became a little more accessible and a little easier for me, maybe based on platforms and all that fun stuff that we had back 20, 22 years ago or so. But I remember I had this .NET 1.1 book, and it was about that thick. And the internet was still pretty sparse back then. And that's just, I kind of taught myself that way. Sometimes reading chapters three times. But yeah, and ever since then, in consulting and various sales roles and post-sales roles, I've been sort of in and out of development and picked up a little Java along the way. But it's a cool set of
Right. I don't know if we were breaking up there for a bit, but hopefully we're coming through clear in the live stream. Do we want to get into our first question?
Looks like we got a little bit of buffering on Chris's end there, but yeah, I think the normal standard question hit us off.
Yeah. Do you remember your first CF push or your first kind of experience or contribution to Cloud Foundry? And I guess we'll start in the order we brought you in. Andrew, go first.
Actually, I do remember that because I was interviewing for Pivotal, and that was the first time I got introduced to Cloud Foundry at that time. So I kind of had to learn it. And to be frank, at that time, I was not very familiar with like cloud platforms. So this was kind of new to me. And I remember thinking, like, usually cloud has a certain degree of learning curve. But when I tried it, I was amazed at how intuitive and straightforward it was. I'm like, that's it. I just CF push and then my app worked. Holy crap. I didn't have to do much. And then I remember also, you know, there's a concept of service bindings and, you know, we're going to talk a little later about Steeltoe. I didn't know that thing even existed at the time. So I actually reinvented Steeltoe as part of my interview. Like I made the whole service binding provider from scratch to attach to my app. But I also thought it was like very intuitive and straightforward. So I distinctly remember that experience.
So yeah. One follow-on question for you, Andrew, before we move on. So you said you interviewed with Pivotal. So you've been on the TAS side for quite a while. How long were you with Pivotal and how long have you been working with .NET on TAS in Cloud Foundry?
I think I've been with Pivotal and then VMware and now Broadcom for 7 years now. I joined when it was version 1.11.
Okay.
Quite a while back. Yeah. Cool. Nice. Martez, how about your first CF push experience?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So a little bit of background. And it's similar to Andrew. So the first time I ever did a CF push during the interview process to come into Pivotal software. But prior to that, I had been working in the education space. And we had this big API that would pull in just hundreds of millions of API calls over the course of a given day. And so we had these big, we were actually in the cloud, but we had these big, huge VMs. And I mean, like massive, like 128 gigabytes or 64 gigabyte memory VMs. And we were always kind of scaling like horizontally to get it to work. And then I think another challenge that we ran into was releasing features and being able to get those tested across different environments and things like that. So I kind of heard about containers and stuff like that, but didn't really know a whole ton at that point in time. And, you know, so having like, and I was always kind of thinking about like, how can we solve these challenges that we have? Then I ended up doing my first CF push and then containerization was just like a snap, right? And then going from source to URL just absolutely blew my mind. Then kind of seeing like how easy it was to kind of scale both horizontally and vertically. Just again, just kind of like a game changer. And it was just kind of like piece by piece, as we kind of layered on different pieces. I said, oh my God, like this is something incredible. So, you know, health checks and then service bindings. And then as we got the steel toe, and I just like, my brain just couldn't take it. I mean, I was just so excited about the whole thing.
Well, awesome. Yeah, it is amazing as we continue to interview more and more folks. The story is very, very similar, and I like to keep hearing that, and unique in every way as well. So, Chris, let's go on to you. How do you remember your first CF push or CF contribution or experience?
Plot twist. I've never used CF push, but obviously,
I think we can fix that today, but yeah.
Yeah,
I've seen some of your demos, Nick. Trust me. But no, I came in two and a half years ago or so, sort of the height of like, hey, this is Kubernetes, this is where we're going. Mm-hmm. Of course, a lot of exposure to containers and the concept of, you know, VM lights and how do we make them more nimble. But yeah.
Interesting. All I heard was, you know, as soon as this show is over, we're going to grab Chris and take him through a, you know, Cloud Foundry 101 class and make him start doing some pushes so that he'll become the convert. I'm starting to wish that we got a nickel for every time somebody said that, you know, their first CF push was mind-blowing or you know, game-changing for them. We'd be rich by now. So
yeah, maybe we bump it up to at least a dollar, though. That's still a lot of nickels. Yeah. Yeah.
I agree with you, Deshaun. You know, when you look at the old ways and then you look at what CF and Cloud Foundry, you know, provide to developers, I don't think people really do. I mean, they think that that's kind of the standard, and it wasn't always that way. It was hard work getting your applications out to production, and now we can make it much, much easier.
Especially .NET and .NET framework apps, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, well, I heard steel toe two times out of three there. So let's start into steel toe. So, Andrew, what is steel toe and how does that help developers?
Well, steel toe is an open source project that we originally started in Pivotal. And I like to describe it as a modular collection of NuGet packages that really help improve experience of .NET apps when running on modern application platforms. You know, originally it started with, you know, focusing on how to maximize the value of running your .NET apps on Cloud Foundry, and then later evolved into, you know, let's support Azure Spring Apps and Tanzu Application Platform. But it also brings a lot of goodness that exists in the Spring ecosystem into the .NET world. And I know Spring has this kind of negative connotation a lot of times in the .NET community, because it's like, you know, there's been multiple attempts to retrofit Spring into .NET world, not always in a very elegant kind of way. But I think in this case, we're bringing more of a patterns specifically for the cloud. So things like service discovery, configuration management, you know, certain patterns around exposing internal telemetry of the app. What I really like about Steel Toe, it's modular. It's like a la carte. I want to use this piece. I want to use this piece. It's not this monolithic thing that you just dump and it overwhelms your code base. It's little helps improve your app's behavior and maximize some of the features when running on these cloud platforms. I also actually ended up contributing a lot of code to Steel Toe over the years.
A ton, by the way.
So it's not really a convergence of .NET and Java, but it's bringing some of the things that Java does well, the actuators, you know, things of that nature into .NET. Is that right?
Correct. It's like, I know some people try to describe it as like, you know, the Spring of .NET. It is not. But it does take a lot of things that exist in the Spring ecosystem and really fills in some of the voids that exist in .NET. Because let's be frank, Spring and .NET have different philosophies. They have different things that ship out of the box, and certain niches that it may need to be filled on Java side don't need to be filled in .NET. So Theoto focuses on niches that do need to be filled and takes the best parts out of Spring. It also helps you in cases where apps need to be kind of polyglot. So if you have some apps written in Java, Spring, some written in .NET, they start behaving more similarly. So you can take the similar configuration providers, manage, expose the same kind of telemetry, and it just kind of consolidates that messaging that it doesn't matter which language you write in, your experience is going to stay consistent.
Okay. And Deshaun, he made a comment that was kind of where I was going to go to the second one, which was with Steeltoe in another project called Eureka, it kind of lets Spring and .NET apps discover each other, work well together. So, could you talk about Eureka for just a second?
Well, then let's give a quick high level tea for new listeners here. What we're talking here about, Cloud Foundry and Teams Application Services is using that platform. Like we know, we talked a lot about with Spring and pushing Spring Java apps, but we can also take .NET Core and .NET Framework apps and have that very similar experience to that same platform, same project, and kind of run them in the same place. So as Deshaun was mentioning too, you can take .NET and your Spring Boot apps and put them in the same platform and have that nice experience. And then furthermore, I guess where we start talking to service discovery, they can, start talking to each other via, a Spring Cloud config server and things of that nature. So, sorry, I just wanted to back up and level set if anyone was kind of confused there. But does anyone want to take the deep dive in the Eureka bit? I don't know if I can do that as well as some of you may be able to.
Sure, I'll take a stab at it. Andrew, go ahead and keep me honest here. But at a high level, Eureka allows you to have like self-discovery of different instances of applications that might need to speak to each other. So there's like a heartbeat system, so you actually can understand like what instances you have online and keep those instances discoverable. And that then allows us to query the Eureka server and then find those instances and then kind of have that connection for those applications that need to talk to each other. So if you have a front-end application that needs to talk to a back-end API, it's easily discoverable, and we can have resiliency with that discovery process. Did I describe that well, Andrew, or anything to add?
Yeah, that's pretty good. I want to add that Eureka in some ways is unique as a service discovery mechanism, because if you look at most service discovery providers, they tend to float at like the platform level, usually implemented through DNS resolution. Eureka actually takes it at the app level. So your app literally talks to another service, which at its core is a glorified dictionary. It's a dictionary of application names and their instances and URLs that they should be discovered. And then when an app starts up, if it knows about Eureka instance, it can go look up other apps by a well-known name inside this dictionary. What's really interesting about the fact that it not only can it look it up, it can actually query the state of those applications and potentially change its behavior based on if something's even present in the registry. So unlike other systems, if you try to access something, it may be down, but with Eureka, you can actually find out if something's even present and available to you before you even try to contact it. And that makes it a little bit unique in that sense. You're also not dependent on any platform because Eureka is just literally a REST service. You can move it around to whatever infrastructure you want.
Now, is Steeltoe required to use some of the services? So like on TAS and on Cloud Foundry, there is the Spring Cloud services. So you got config server, service registry. You don't require Steeltoe to be able to connect to those services from a .NET app, or do you?
Well, for service registry, yeah, because there is a specific protocol used. It's more or less the RESTful API, but if you want to have kind of a seamless experience where instead of figuring out how to talk to it and all that stuff, we provide client-side libraries that instrument a regular HTTP client and give you, you know, injectable objects where you can both discover what's already there. But for most use cases, you literally will want to use like an HTTP client. And instead of using a URL of another service, you just want to use a well-known name for the host name. And it will do automatic translation for you under the covers. And that's the part that Steeltoe kind of makes really nice for you.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and dig into the meat of this. So there's often been a statement out there, you know, Cloud Foundry, TAS, Tanzu Application Service, they are the best place to run your .NET workloads. Back up that statement for us. Why is that true? I mean, how does the platform as a service differentiate itself between, say, bare metal or straight VMs? Why is TAS so good for .NET workloads?
I'll go ahead and take a shot there. So I think one of the things, operational efficiency. So other places that I have had the opportunity to work at, Patch Tuesday, right? And we literally had patching engineers that spent their whole time just patching systems all day. And so that becomes like a really streamlined process with TAS. Build packs, absolutely love build packs. CF push detects my application, compiles it, releases it as a binary, puts it onto my container, and I'm just running within 45 seconds. Absolutely game changer around that developer productivity. And then like things like load balancing, right? Like we don't have to worry about like getting traffic into our applications and defining load balancers and different middleware layers and things like that. Service bindings is absolutely huge, right? So in combination with something like Steeltoe, I can have my environment inspected and then automatically connect to different services. So those are just a couple of high-level things that come to mind when I think about like some of the efficiency we get with the platform as a service versus just like bare metal.
Yeah, and I just want to add, I think one of the key differentiators why it's an absolutely fantastic platform for running .NET apps is .NET in some ways is unique because if you look at the legacy .NET side of things, it was Windows only. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, you know, when you tell operators, hey, you need to run this on Windows, they're like, whoa, Windows, whoa, what is this thing now? And if you actually look at the process of doing it traditionally, bare metal or VMs, how you manage it, how you deploy, how you operate those apps, Windows versus Linux, is very, very different. Like two completely separate processes. What Cloud Foundry fundamentally changes for you is it consolidates the deployment and operation to be consistent. It's a CF push whether you're deploying to Windows and to Linux. You know, we have standardized build packs that can take your .NET Core application and run it on Linux in a container. We have one that takes IIS kernel and makes your legacy WCF, web forms, ASMX, if you go that far back, app, and we'll make it work on Windows. And it bootstraps it in a way that you don't really much have to do much or know how to do that. And I think that's where the magic lies. And if you look at actually a lot of larger customers, they come with portfolios where there's a mix. It's kind of rare if you look at a large customer, we'll say, well, we only have .NET Core or .NET Framework. These days, you mostly find a mix of things.
Nice.
And I will ask, so to get Chris in, you know, I know you haven't done a whole lot with TAS, self-professed newbie. Do you have challenges with .NET on Kubernetes? You know, you're kind of a Kubernetes guy. What kind of challenges do you see there? And then we'll get Andrew or Martez to kind of compare that against what they would see in TAS.
Yeah, we'll definitely perk up Andrew's ears here. But yeah, I mean, you've got the framework stuff, right, which has been around, and there's still a ton of that out there. And then what, about 5, 6, 7 years ago, .NET Core came out, and that really opened up, right, the options for, you know, operating systems and where you can actually run your .NET apps, right, to be quite primitive about it. And yet still, you've got a lot of these things that were in framework, right, that were kind of solved for on the Windows platform
Nope, I think we're losing Chris again.
Hopefully it's not my connection. Am I back?
You are.
Yep.
But you've got a lot of these concepts that were part of the framework, right, and baked into, you know, Windows, to be quite honest with you, that really weren't considered when you start talking about core and then running it on, say, a Linux or a Mac OS, right? So things like authentication, we see challenges with single sign-on and things of that nature. So while there's still, yeah, you can run your .NET Core workloads on Kubernetes, there's still some challenges there. And I think we're starting to finally see some of those kinks get worked out. But yeah.
Okay.
We don't need to get into all of them, but yeah, I mentioned a couple there.
All right.
I think too, we can point out too that when we're talking about Cloud Foundry or TAS, when these workloads, so we have our container orchestrator under the covers called Diego, right? And that's based on a Linux, we'll call Linux subsystem. But we also have like Diego for Windows that also does that same whole process in orchestrating, but using Windows Server images as well. So
yeah,
we're not only orchestrating the full like Linux stack, but we also have that full Windows Server stack, which then allows when we talk between about like .NET Core and .NET Framework, those are two different kind of container runtimes within the same platform that make that same kind of overall experience, right?
Yeah. Hopefully I didn't confuse that. Sorry, I was going down the Kubernetes path there.
But yeah, I mean, I think when we look at, I guess, maybe a comparison, I think when we're especially talking about TAS and Cloud Foundry is that the ability to run these .NET Framework workloads in an orchestrated Windows Server way, I think is something very, key that, Martez was talking about Patch Tuesday. Bosch and things like that can maybe make that go away, so to speak, or just have that be, apply the new Windows stem cell and roll that out type of thing.
One thing I want to kind of highlight, and this is the fundamental difference between Kubernetes and Cloud Foundry, is even though both are container-based technologies, containerization is actually a byproduct of you trying to deploy an app to Cloud Foundry. The unit of work that the developer deals with is still either application source code or compiled binaries. If you move towards Kubernetes, you have to have them understand how to create containers and the container introduce concept of container registry. A lot of times there's a learning curve to that you have to teach developers how to do. Another thing that most people don't realize, because technically creating a container is not that difficult, Docker file. What people don't realize is that image is now locked to a particular version of OS and all its patches when you minted it. So it's actually like a point in time that drags not just your application code, but everything upstream, like operating system. So you might have patched the base operating system, but your container will actually downgrade it once you try to run it. And so you need a strategy on how to deal with that from an operational perspective. Cloud Foundry actually does things differently because the unit of work is not a container. There's a compiled thing called Droplet, and that's just almost like a folder that gets mounted into a standard container. So the process on the deployment is a little disjoint, and that actually allows the platform to stay up to date in a much better kind of robust way than things on Kubernetes, where you kind of have to solve those challenges yourself.
Well, and I think that goes back to what Martez was saying on the patch, the Patch Tuesdays is, when we're talking about having to upgrade a fleet of applications, that's where Cloud Foundry is going to come in helpful, is that you can go in and update the platform. The platform's going to update the underlying OS. You're no longer having to go container by container by container. You don't have to come up with a separate method. This is something that's all done by the platform. So, being able to handle those vulnerabilities, being able to handle the upgrades, it's something that is very easily done within a platform versus just a strict container.
And we're pulling that forward too, by the way, in our Kubernetes offerings as well, by the way. But that's your point is it's been there, and it just took a lot of that operational toil right away. So,
cool. All right.
Okay. Let's see here. So we talked about .NET Core and .NET Framework, and I mean, can we talk about how we maybe choose or maybe how we modernize some of these, I guess maybe say older .NET Framework apps on a cloud platform in general, and how, you know, Taz or Cloud Foundry can help that journey going if you might still have some older apps.
Marcus, you want to talk about that or?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think it's a gradual approach, right? So because Cloud Foundry can accept .NET Framework applications and .NET Core, some people feel like they have to boil the ocean today and they have to convert all the applications over to .NET Core immediately, right? So, but we can literally take your applications running on .NET Framework today. As Andrew said, some of the older technologies like ASMX, WCF, Windows Communication Foundation, some of those older technologies, you can actually host those today running on .NET Framework, right? So you can get those immediate wins. And then I think there's that gradual approach that as you want to modernize your applications, use some of the modern patterns, strangler patterns, things like that, kind of break off the monolith piece by piece and then slowly deploy them into .NET Core running on TAS. So I think that dual nature of being able to run both systems and kind of taking it step by step is like one of the big wins that we see with running the platform from TAS. And then the experience in doing that is really similar, right? So I don't necessarily have to have like a completely different pipeline or completely different like way that I release my applications between .NET Framework or .NET Core, even though where they might land, on different Diego cells and things like that. It's still similar to me as an application developer on the front side when I'm writing my code, right?
Right. Yeah, so it abstracts that completely away. Go ahead.
I think it's also worth adding that a lot of times customers decide to modernize without really truly evaluating whether they need to modernize, because a lot of apps are kind of in that maintenance mode where they just try to keep the lights on. Mm-hmm. Maybe reduce some of the operational costs. And a lot of people are telling them, well, you have to modernize in order to take advantage of the cloud. This is not so with Cloud Foundry. You can literally lift and shift some of this crapware code that still is a big part of your business and run it without much effort. And at the end of the day, it's a business decision whether you need to modernize.
And I think that's an important point, right? So when you're talking about modernizing your applications, you've got .NET Framework out there. You can kind of get the best of both worlds. I agree with your point, Andrew. There's some applications out there that we're looking to modernize that we may not need to. But to Martez's point, you can get all the benefits of hyperconverged and putting things onto a platform with your .NET frameworks as they sit today. You can use the Windows Diego cells to host those. At the same time, you can host the exact same complement on .NET Core. So you can actually have both things running side by side. So immediate wins for your infrastructure reduction. Move your .NET frameworks over to TAS. Be able to reduce your infrastructure and take advantage of that shared infrastructure, while at the same time be able to do kind of a compare and contrast against your .NET modernization as you need to, if you need to. And being able to host those all on the same platform, giving the developers the same kind of push experience, CF push experience, or the same type of pipeline for both framework and core is very important. And it's something that can, you know, dramatically speed up and advance a company's movement to .NET Core if they want to, or just reduce their infrastructure.
Another great comment from Deshaun here about, you know, having that single builder, single pipeline type of methodology for the platform.
Now, one of the things that Chris had mentioned was single sign-on, you know, some issues with single sign-on. We know within Cloud Foundry, there's, you know, within TAS, there's the single sign-on, a tile that can come in to ease that portion of it. We've also, on the Kubernetes side, there's also plugins and things that you can do for single sign-on. But one of the points I wanted to hit is a lot of the customers that have tried to use Cloud Foundry for Windows applications or, you know, .NET applications have been requesting that we have, you know, integrated Windows Auth, IWA, which is something that we have historically not had. And it's been a blocker for some companies. So, Andrew, I'm going to address this to you. Is there anything that we're doing today to kind of look at that? Are there workarounds for IWA, or is that something that's on the horizon to get fixed here soon?
Yeah, IWA is definitely a lot of times a big bottleneck for moving a lot of legacy apps because it's very common for internet applications to use IWA in a traditional .NET framework applications. And this is a pet peeve topic of mine. I think I've been trying to tackle it since I joined Pivotal. So we actually have delivered a IWA story in a number of ways on Cloud Foundry. So there is a Kerberos build pack that is actually written by me. And it's now officially supported by Broadcom. And if you're running .NET on Linux, you will have full support for Kerberos authentication. Keep in mind that IWA and Kerberos are slightly different things. So IWA includes NTLM and Kerberos. If you're running on Linux, you're only going to get the Kerberos version. So if you require NTLM, you're still a little bit stuck. But Kerberos is technically considered a better protocol anyway, so you should be doing that regardless. On Windows, the story is a little bit more complex because there the computer technically has to be domain joined to allow it. Now, we have found a way to do this without domain joining the computer. And there is now actually support for running containers on Windows as if they were part of domain joined machine. However, there are certain limitations right now about that implementation relative to how you can configure the routing to the application. And at the moment, all the apps will share the same identity. That is just limitations of the early version of this feature. And we expect that those features will get corrected in the next version or two of Cloud Foundry, where it will allow customers to tackle a lot more scenarios using this feature. But the great thing is those machines no longer have to be domain joined, which is kind of problematic when you look at the disposable nature of VMs on Cloud Foundry versus Active Directory, where machines had to be more or less statically registered.
I think Active Directory would get confused when you do a repave of a few hundred Windows Diego cells and they get recreated within an hour, things like
that. Well, you would have a lot of like dead orphans inside Active Directory. You would need a process to cleaning that up. Also, because domain joining requires rebooting the machine, it kind of becomes problematic when you're trying to build a new Diego cell. Because you first need to build it and then join it and then reboot it. And that complicates the process.
Now, did I just hear, I think, Nick, I just heard Andrew say that he was volunteering to do a demo and post it up to the channel about how to use the Kerberos build pack. Did I hear that right?
Come on,
I can't do the Kerberos today because I don't have the Active Directory.
Oh, no, I'm saying I heard you volunteer to post that up to the channel. Not today, but, you know, get one up here later and post it out there for all the viewers to take a look at and kind of walk through.
For sure.
Absolutely.
I can actually provide you a link to the build pack and, you know, I can tell you all about it. One of the things I can actually post is a link. So if you ever wanted to learn about how IWA works under the covers, I do have a video I recorded years ago, and I still give it to customers to watch because it will tell you exactly how it works at the protocol level, down to how it integrates with the operating system, down to how .NET framework leverages it. And a lot of concepts will become a lot more clear. So I'll dig that up and post it in chats.
Yeah, I think we can take that. And if you don't mind, we can post it up to the YouTube channel so people can take a look at it. You know, after this episode, I'm sure they're going to have questions. So maybe that'll answer some of them. But if not, come talk to us on Cloud Foundry on LinkedIn, Cloud Foundry Weekly on LinkedIn. We'll make sure that we get that out to Andrew and see if he can answer questions as they come up. And I think on that, Andrew, you had some demos or some slideware that you wanted to show us, yes?
Yeah. So a few slides I kind of wanted to introduce. Because when we talk about stuff that comes out of the box, it also has to be weighted with what's available in the community, right? So, and a lot of things that Cloud Foundry delivers on has been built over the years by the community. And in this case, I kind of built this little diagram that showcases different types of apps that you may encounter in the .NET ecosystem and how those can be deployed on TAS, Cloud Foundry. You know, obviously the latest and the greatest, we're talking about web apps that are powered by Kestrel, and you 99% of the time want to run those on Linux using the .NET Core build pack. And it will containerize your apps, both from source code and compiled binaries. You know, one of the another very common one that comes out of you know, a lot of legacy stuff is applications that require to be hosted inside IIS, right? So they're not self-contained; they actually require a server to run in. And we do have this HWC build pack. It's called Hosted Web Core, and it's actually a kernel of IIS. It's not full IIS, but it can take an application and run it. One of the interesting ones I built was the Windows Service build pack. This one's not officially supported, but if you have a Windows Service, you can actually run it inside a container without converting it to a console app, which is a common requirement to try to run something Cloud Foundry. And that will land it on Windows Service. But I think one of the cool demos I wanted to show you guys today is a one I use with clients, and it has a lot of features around Steeltoe. So in this case, I'll open up this demo.
Can I quickly interrupt? Do you have Apps Manager in dark mode? Did I just see that right?
Sorry?
Do you have Apps Manager in dark mode?
Or is that I have this extension. It turns every website to dark mode.
Oh, I see. I was like, what? When did this come out? I missed that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
This is my favorite thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. See?
Also one of my favorite extensions.
Yeah.
So I built this demo to kind of showcase the platform itself. And, you know, after you deploy the app, you know, it will tell you what the .NET version is, what the container address is. One of the interesting things that Steeltoe provides is the concept of actuators. So actuators are like special endpoints that your app exposes to get internal telemetry about it. So what kind of telemetry can you get? Well, I often want to know what kind of configuration the app sees, whether it's environmental variables, console parameters, files. So in this case, I can see all the configurations that have went into this app, right? So in this case, I see it's a JSON configuration provider that's coming from app settings production JSON, and these are all the values that it has contributed. Notice that, for example, certain sensitive values are blanked out, so you don't see them. There's another like really interesting ones where you can see things like mappings, right? So you can see all the endpoints where your app will respond to. And like, for example, if you wanted to build a security audit, like what are the potential things that someone can hit and your app will respond to? This will give you that. One of the ones that I really, really enjoy, and I don't know, you guys probably encountered this scenario before. You know, you go to production, something doesn't work. Your app is instrumented with a necessary degree of logging, but the log level you have set basically emits those logs from being emitted. So you can't do like proper trace. So traditionally, like, you know, log level is set inside some kind of config file. So you would have to modify the config file and restart the app. That's obviously suboptimal because, you know, I don't want to restart the app. One of the things that Steelto will allow you to do is actually change the log levels dynamically. So I'll show you how that works. I got this console app. So let's just attach and look at the logs.
Is that possible to make it a little bigger, the text?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Perfect.
What space am I in? Targets. So I'm just going to target this app. Blue one, I think. CP demo blue. CF logs. So now I should have a live stream of logs. Let's just confirm that. Yeah, that's the right instance. So you can see that I can press this button. You can see I get errors coming out. I get warnings coming out. I get information coming out, but anything lower like debug or trace, it doesn't actually appear in the logs. Like I'm getting, like there's nothing really being shown here. What I can do is go to the applications manager for this application and change the log level dynamically. So I can basically say, hey, for a particular logger, let's go all the way to trace. In this case, I'm going to increase everything to trace. And then if I press this, I should be able to see it. Not take.
Oh, the joys of light demos.
Mm. I know. This is like one of those. Yeah. Come on. Out.
No, is that attempting to just change the log level on the fly? Very easy.
Yeah, it is.
Similar format to like what you can do with some Spring stuff.
Yeah.
Nice.
Why am I not, as always, like it's,
yeah. Well, and as you're looking at that, I'll call out one more thing that I saw on the list, right? There was something, you know, there's the possibility of getting heap dumps from your logs as well. I know this is something me and Martez both worked on because that was a feature that was there on the Spring side. It was not on the .NET side due to some complications, but that is something that now works today. So being able to get your heap dumps directly from your applications and an endpoint has proven to be very, you know, helpful to customers.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why it doesn't work right now. I don't want to debug that particular feature, but trust me, it works. It works. You know, this is one of those things.
I love that. Trust me, it works. Not right now, but it works.
Not right now, yeah. But it works.
Yep.
One of the cool features that I actually wanted to show you, and this is kind of an experimental thing I wrote. You know, we have this competing more modern platform that we wrote called Tanzu Application Platform that's based on Kubernetes. And one of the things it has is like, what do we call it? Tilt integration. So you can actually like live sync. So the idea is like you change your application code locally and it patches a live container remotely and kind of reflects what's going on there. We never had this kind of feature for TAS, but it got me thinking, you know, I can technically SSH into the app. So what do we have? CIF apps, CIF SSH, if you've never seen something like this. So right now I'm inside the container. I can go and look at the app. This is all the files for my .NET application. What if I go and through SSH channel, actually go and patch an app? Can I achieve the same experience? And the answer is yes. I've actually been successfully able to recreate that. So I'll show you how that works. Added in one of these tabs here.
Can you blow that up just a little bit?
Yeah.
Your terminal skills on Windows are quite impressive, by the way.
And is that's Windows terminal, Andrew?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I built a special script. By the way, I'm a huge fan of this framework called Nuke. And Nuke. Nuke essentially inner loop. That's right. Inner loop. So I personally hate MS Build. If you've ever tried to build a custom target for MS Build, you want to pull your hair out. So Nuke essentially allows you to use C Sharp to create really easy tasks. You know, if you use Gulp, if you use Gradle on Java. I really like creating helper scripts for my app and not in shell scripts or bat files. I want to use a rich language like C Sharp, and that's what Nuke gives me.
And this is the Nuke .build, right?
Yeah.
Just want to post this up for people to look at.
So in this case, I'm actually built a target that uses Tilt to deploy the app to Cloud Foundry, and then set up a local watch. So it will watch local files for changes, and if any of the files are changed, it will trigger a live container update. So in this case, I'm just going to push the app first time. So the first time it uses the build pack to deploy the app, but after it's done, I'll show you how the live sync works. Just give it a minute. Yeah, and while that's deploying, I can actually show you a little bit of how I did the Nuke syntax. I'm a huge fan of it because it allows me to avoid like a bunch of YAML and things like that. So you know, in this case, I can do things like .NET publish and use Fluent syntax to set all the parameters. And then essentially my apps comes with an entry point script called build sh, and I can just pass build sh publish, build sh pack. I have one that will create a GitHub release for me out of the box. So I find giving it to someone is very, very useful for them to figure out how to compile, how to run my application without having to write a bunch of notes. Almost done deploying. Almost close.
Mm-hmm. Martez, Chris, is Nuke anything that you guys have ever looked at, or are you going to be looking at it after this demo?
I've looked at it before. I'm vaguely familiar with it, but I haven't gone too deep into it. But I do like the prospects of being able to kind of write some of that customized build code in .NET or C Sharp.
Yeah. Yep, same.
Yeah, if you can use Cloud Foundry at TAS to make your deployment easier, you can use Nuke to make your build easier. I bet there's going to be a couple people checking this out.
Oh, for sure. And it's got some pretty cool ASCII art too. So,
yeah, I love ASCII art.
Yeah. Why is this getting so slow today? For the build pack deployment, this is the first deployment that happens that's usually the slow.
I'll tell you what, while we're waiting on that, for our viewers out there, be sure and hit that subscribe button, the obligatory hit the subscribe button so that you know when new episodes are releasing. Mm-hmm. Look us up on Cloud Foundry Weekly on LinkedIn and CF_Weekly on Twitter. That's where we'll be posting all the details of next shows. Any questions that come to us, we'll be answering them there. And if we need to get a hold of Andrew, Martez, or Chris, you got questions for them, let us know. We'll make sure it gets out to them and we'll get the answers back to you.
And if you're listening either live, watching live, or listening on the podcast, another plug too at cloudfoundryweekly.com. That's our podcast site, and we take this live stream and then set it out as a podcast. If you want to listen to it in that way, check us out. And if you're interested in joining the show, just hit up the Cloud Foundry Weekly LinkedIn or Twitter and reach out, and we'll try to get you scheduled on our next available slot as well.
Yeah, right. Very interested in anybody out there that's got cool stories. Have you done something new on Cloud Foundry that maybe you think nobody else has done? Are you a partner and you've got products that go out on Cloud Foundry or onto Tanzu Application Service? Come talk to us. We'd love to get you on the show.
All right, it's done. So the first deployment is done, the app is running, and the live view is attached to it. So I'm going to go ahead and edit some code locally.
Can you make it a little bigger?
You're going to see how quickly it's reflected, actually. So you can see this is an actual URL where the app is deployed now. So I'm going to go and say...
Oh, Andrew, you're killing my old eyes, man. Is there any possible to make it a little bit bigger?
Just
trying. Uh-oh, my IDE is now frozen. I'm trying to accommodate you. Oh,
whoa. There we go.
One extreme to the other. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to save the file.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it noticed that this file has changed. Right now it's recompiling it locally for Linux. And then it's going to upload the delta to the container.
Well, that's awesome.
Nice. Now, would this work on both variants of the .NET build packs, or is this only a .NET Core thing, or how would that work
if you're trying to do this? This is a .NET Core. I haven't tried this with I changed it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there, it patched, right? Cloud Foundry is awesome.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yep.
Yeah. Second time will even be faster. The world. So I think it only takes I timed it 10 to 15 seconds to do this.
So maybe not something you want to do in production, awesome, but absolutely help you out when you're developing code, being able to just get these live updates.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the other interesting aspects that I'm currently working on, stay tuned, we can talk about that next show, but I actually have a local simulator of creation of the build pack. So if you wanted to run the build pack locally and look at what it spits out, you'll be able to do that.
Very nice.
There we go. Updated.
Hello, world.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's really bringing in that constant deployment that everybody's talking about, being able to actually get that out there in real time. So again, I could see that being highly useful, definitely in the non-prod environments when you're testing code, wanting to see what kind of changes happen, being able to do that without having to do a build each and every time. Hugely advantageous.
All right. Well, I think we're getting pretty close on time. Are there any kind of final things you want to call out or say before we kind of drop off here, our guests?
Hey, framework or core, I'm a TAS believer.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll get you allocated for your CF push training here soon.
Come on.
Yeah, we'll get you taken care of there, Chris. Because once you do it, you're never going to want to go back. We'll have to have it on a future show so that you can talk about your first experience. It was only 3 days ago. So
I won't be a snowflake anymore, though.
Yeah. And I guess, all right. Should we plug our next show for next week too before we stop the stream?
Go right ahead.
Yeah, so I correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe next show we're bringing back Deshaun and Dan Vega to talk about Spring Cloud Data Flow. So if you're into Spring and Spring Cloud Data Flow, check that out. I think it's going to be a great show as well.
Anytime you got Deshaun on a show, it's always fun. Dan, for sure. Smartest guy I know when it comes to Spring, so.
Yeah, and I'm glad Deshaun is agreeing about him joining the show next week. So thanks again for watching. And yeah, thanks to all the live viewers. And really, really appreciate you. And don't forget to like and subscribe to our channels.
Andrew, Chris, Martez, thank you all for joining the show today. Hopefully we'll get some questions to y'all here soon. And appreciate you taking the time. It was a great episode.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
And, all right. We can't forget CF by, right?
CF by.
Yeah, CF by.
All right.